A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be talking with my old friend Timothy Knight here in just a moment or two. You know, Tim was one of several NRA board members who resigned after trying to blow the whistle on some of what was going on within the organization back in the 2019 era. Tim was actually, along with those other board members, actually subject to retaliation for trying to blow the whistle on what was going on there. So when Tim reached out to me and said, you know, I'm getting involved in the NRA again, and I'm actually encouraging others to get involved as well, I thought that was pretty significant. You know, listen, I mean, I wear my bias on my sleeve when it comes to the NRA. I want to see a strong NRA. I'm very supportive of the current leadership there at NRA, and I am hopeful that this organization can, again, return to its strength of former years with more transparency, with more accountability in place. And I think that important steps are being taken to take the organization in that direction. Tim does as well, but I wanted to have Tim on to talk about why he has made this decision to actively start supporting the NRA once again. So without any further ado, let's kick off that conversation. Take a look and a listen. Tim, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely, Cam. Always a pleasure.
You know, and as I told the audience before we brought you on here, I mean, you and I have known each other for a long time. We go way back to 2011, 2010, Colorado, the recall elections.
Yep. Over 10 years now.
Yeah. And, you know, you obviously are somebody who is, I mean, again, your segment of advocacy and activism, I think, is unquestioned. So talk about what led you to resign from the NRA board, along with a couple of your board members a few years ago.
Sure. We were looking around, and we had questions, and they weren't being answered. And it really, we tried internally to ask those questions and pretty much hit stone walls, and that's none of your business, and you don't need to know that. And that wasn't going to work. So we started generating paperwork to keep asking these questions and going to committee meetings. And again, it was nothing. And when we dared to question management and our concerns about money out loud, that's when the blitzkrieg on me and Sean Maloney and Esther Schneider, who spoke up with me, came at us. And Cam, you mentioned like how we met. I've always tried to be dialed in for my mission or who I work for or what I'm doing. And so that meant at NRA annual meetings or whatnot, I was always on the floor. I mean, you saw me walking by. We did interviews back then too. My boss was on the floor, and I didn't work for management. My job as a board member was to listen to the board, listen to the members, and help management and the employees, you know, optimize what they were doing. And I think for more board members at that time, they got lost in who they worked for, who we were supposed to work with to help succeed. And we were supposed to question those things. And when the appeal went south in the side conversations and then in the committees and in the paperwork and asking for, let's do a full accounting. Let's just look, let's just see where all the dollars are going. Let's ask the hard questions. No, nothing should be off the table because it's not our money. It belongs to the members. When I started asking those questions and hit a brick wall, and then they started attacking me personally, which I can handle because I want to work with people, but I'm not going to ignore the truth. I can't do it. It ended up being that to get my voice heard, because they stripped me of all committees, so I lost kind of all the input. Most of the board wouldn't talk to me again. The best thing I could do was to resign with a reason. So Sean, Esther, and I spent some time drafting a resignation letter saying we believed in the mission of the NRA, but we thought it had gone askew, and we needed to ask the hard questions. And the 27 words of the Second Amendment and all the other missions that the NRA is on need to be our focus. And if they're not, whether it's a cult of personality we're dealing with or just not taking the long or the short view, other than what ended up being personal empires as opposed to the mission of the NRA, we had no choice. I had no choice but to resign with a letter saying, hey, we just can't do this. Things have got to change.
So that begs the question, what has brought you back into actively supporting the National Rifle Association?
What I mentioned, my resignation letter, the key missions. We need people, and the NRA is the one that does this. There are so many great Second Amendment groups that are doing amazing things, but the NRA has the broadest scope. We need people supporting collegiate shooting. We need people supporting the instructors. We need people at the competitions and matches. We need to be in the culture of the 2A sphere. We need to be talking to hunters. We need to, and if we lose that trust, that's going to be, the consequences of that are huge. We've already seen the loss of influence of the NRA. Of course, the legislators at every level want those endorsements, but the Republican Party left basically the Second Amendment and gun stuff, gun rights, out of their party platform. So we have to go earn that back. And I've known Doug Hamlin for a long time. He has to earn it with me, just like he does everyone else. But we need that back. So the NRA is going to have to earn it. But I'm liking what I'm seeing. I'm seeing new board members who are willing to ask the hard questions, willing to do the work. I'm thankful for that. There are still some people on the board I'd like to see move on. But I'm liking the tide. And Cam, when I did the recalls in 2013 in Colorado, I kind of had no choice. It was, okay, we got to get doing this. There was going to be no other way. The cavalry wasn't coming. What allies we had to do, we had to earn it. Now is that thought process with the NRA. Some mistakes were made. I'd be the first person to say, you know, they came after me hard. They cost me a lot of legal fees, all kinds of stuff. I have reasons to say, don't ever do it again, but it's bigger than me. It has to be the whole thing moving forward. We have to get those people back. So the NRA is that vehicle. I'm liking where the management is going, and I'm liking what the board is doing. And so I'm telling gun owners, having been the one probably one of the most publicly wronged and said stuff out loud, and that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, he works for Bloomberg, which is laughable. I'm not on Bloomberg's auto dial, as you well know. But I'm seeing good things. And when I have to recognize those good things, and Cam, I worry about the foundation of the Second Amendment if we're all not talking, if we're not all engaging. And all right, again, they're going to have to do some door knocking. They're going to have to go out and earn trust back that has been lost. But we have to start that conversation. So this is the start of that. I'm going to be doing it. But now is the time to readdress, hey, these guys can be and were effective. We need them to do it again. And without politicians are so busy dividing us by you're this, you're that right now. Gun owners need a consistent voice. They had the NRA in the past, and there's other groups now that are doing a good job, but the NRA is the widest in scope. They're the ones that do the lobbying. They're the ones that do the training. Without that foundation, we will look around in 20 or 30 years and wonder, you know, why youth aren't shooting and hunting to the numbers that you talk about often. We have to get that base back. So I'm not on the board now, but I really, truly do believe in the direction the NRA is headed now.
You know, and what you talk about is so important because, as you say, you know, we've got groups that have stepped up in terms of litigation. We've got groups that have stepped up their lobbying efforts. I think it's fair to say not quite the footprint that the NRA had at its apogee, right, at its peak of power. But other groups have sort of stepped into the breach, right? But, you know, the general operations side of things, I mean, we think of the NRA maybe first and foremost as this political entity, right, in the NRA's Institute for Legislative Action. But the general ops side of things, the competitive shooting side, the instructor side, the education and training components, the history lessons that are taught through the Firearms Museum, all of those things, as you say, are crucially important at both sustaining and building a culture of responsible gun ownership in this country. Right. And without that backbone, right, without those individuals who understand and who are exercising their Second Amendment rights on a regular basis, that they understand the importance of that right. This right is going to wither away. It doesn't really matter how many court victories we might have. If you don't have that culture to sustain the exercise of this right will be infringed.
100%. And, you know, we're missing. Since probably 2019, we are not relevant to a whole bunch. Now, the NRA is kind of the dynamics of who an NRA members tend to be, 50-year-old white men. The NRA is always, as I was there, trying to earn the respect and, you know, work with other groups of people. That can't ever stop. But we've taken kind of a break. There's a whole new generation of gun owners that we're not talking to, the COVID gun owners. And a lot of them hear the bad stuff and they go, hey, yeah, hard pass. And as I said before, and I've told Doug Hamlin this, you're going to have to earn it back. But now is that time. And, you know, I've listened, of course, to some of your interviews with Doug, and he's a good guy. He's a Marine. He's a hard charger. He's working nonstop, but he needs a team around him that can succeed in all of those areas. And a lot of those departments have been greatly reduced because of budgets. And that only increases A, when they earn it back, and B, when they have people who are willing to step into those roles and do that. And that's vital.
Yeah. Well, you know, and to that end, I said before you came on, you know, I wear my bias on my sleeve here when it comes to the NRA. I want to see the NRA succeed. I want to see a strong NRA. Like you, I am encouraged by the directions that the NRA has taken. And, you know, I can tell you, I mean, I'm pretty sure you're aware of this as well. You know, there have been reductions at the NRA, right? I mean, we just saw a round just a couple of months ago that really hit publications hard. Yes. And so, you know, the employees that are left are doing the jobs of, you know, two, sometimes three people. They're wearing a lot of hats. And I can speak to this personally. The dedication that a lot of these employees have to the organization, right? And again, it's about more than themselves. It's about more than the current regime. It is about, again, sustaining this organization that has been around since 1871. It's about being a part of something bigger than yourself.
Right.
And I've been really impressed at, you know, the dedication and the long hours that a lot of these staff are putting in right now to, you know, again, to sort of right the ship and turn things around in the direction that we want it to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a job you have to be passionate about. We need those people. We do. And the people in the building that work there, most of them are magnificent people, Ken, that we're really excited to have. And we've had to furlough some people. We're hoping we can bring those people back. I hope, because I know these things have to happen. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to start seeing fewer magazines. We're going to start. People are probably going to have to wait a couple of days for a return phone call. We're certainly, and I say we because I'm talking from a member, we're certainly going to have grace and the understanding that things are forced to change, and hopefully we can get some of that back. But Cam, if we don't start the conversation, and Doug Hamlin did not come to me and say, hey, Tim Knight, can you do me a favor? Can you call? I think I texted you a little while ago and said, hey, Cam, I think it's time. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. That did not start with the permission from Doug Hamlin to do this. This is of my own volition. And it's important that people hear that. And they say, well, why Tim Knight? Because I was, and plenty of good people resigned for the board for various reasons, and they had those reasons, and that's fine. But in 2019, three board members stood up and said, no more, we've got to fix this. And we left with, please, let's bring this back. So why Tim Knight or Sean Maloney or Esther Schneider said something should hopefully make a difference with the members. You know, I don't work for the members anymore. I feel like I do. My phone seems to ring at least once a week still about NRA stuff, and I haven't been on the board for quite a while now. But it's important for me to still connect with people because it's about making those relationships, shaking those hands, knocking on those doors, going to those competitions, you know, getting the certifications to become an instructor. That is key to how we keep this, because if we're not relevant, as we've been talking about, it won't matter.
Absolutely. And, you know, I kind of see you, Tim, as maybe an unofficial ombudsman for NRA members, right? You know, that's a position. I don't really know that we have those positions in papers anymore, but the ombudsman used to be the reader's representative to the paper, right? And, again, I just kind of see you having kind of naturally slipped into that role after you stepped away from the board. As you say, you know, you and Sean and Esther were really among the first to start publicly talking about these things. And so when you stepped away, I think that you maintained a lot of credibility with NRA members. So, you know, as you say, you're not on the board now. Are you planning on running for the board of directors?
You know, I've learned to say never say never. I might. I've been very involved in scouting and helping youth for the past couple of years. That's been very rewarding. I've gotten to spend some time with my family. From about 2013 to 2019, I was mostly an absentee dad and husband, and my wife put up with that. So I need to find balance. But I believe if I bring value, I think right now, the key people on the board, not to say that they're not all important, although I do believe the board is too large, is people who optimize from the business perspective. What I've run businesses, I know how to look at a spreadsheet, but what I bring to the table is the knocking on door, going out and meeting people, spending time in the field. That's what I did. I visited 17 states when I was an NRA director on my own dime because I believed it was important. You and I even did some door knocking.
We did. Yeah, Northern Virginia.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, I bring that in 2028. And maybe 2026, you know, maybe something like what I bring to the table will be important to the members. And yeah, we'll have to see. I haven't ruled anything out, but it has to be of service to others and it has to be useful. If it's not, I understand. I certainly am working on other things.
Well, and you know, there are opportunities to serve that organization outside of the board, right? I mean,
100%.
You know, the NRA, as you say, has a lot of passionate employees there at the headquarters, but they have a lot of passionate members, and they need more passionate members.
They do.
To get involved, whether it's their, you know, local gun club and, you know, bringing a competitive shooting that's NRA affiliated to those institutions. Whether, again, it's serving as a grassroots activist on the, you know, NRA-ILA front lines, there are lots of opportunities to step up and to help make the organization strong. Obviously, you know, donating money is important, yep. But donating time and energy is important, too. And there's certainly a need for that.
You know, one of the things that is really important is to show members. This is kind of my gig last time, but to show members how they can actually get involved. Because we'd say grassroots, what does that mean? We talked about it briefly as knocking on doors. And it's awkward politics because most people, as we've mentioned before, don't want someone knocking on their door. But it's that engagement. Members, you can do this. I will actually be signing up as a volunteer with ILA as just a member and probably going to Pennsylvania and other places. So you can engage. You can go through their website and do that, just like you can bring relevance back to your club, saying, hey, we have these matches, we can do these things. You have to facilitate that. And I think the NRA is going to get better at showing their members how to be a part of the NRA. It's not just give me $50, which is super important, folks. Money matters. We hit on that. But it's the engagement of the members. And I believe I've talked to some ILA friends. I say friends because I've known them for 10 years about what some of the plans and what they think. And it's going to take us being involved. So to the gun owner, doesn't matter what your stripes are, what you're doing, you're a hunter, a tactical shooter, doesn't matter. If you care about the Second Amendment and you want to be engaged, ILA is a great way to do that and do the grassroots workshops, get out into the field, meet your fellow. They don't send you. They use a program. They don't send you to doors that will absolutely hate you. Unfortunately, the data trickles down that way, but they'll send you to doors that will at least be open to a conversation based on the data that we are is on all of us. And sometimes that's what it takes. Some people go, I didn't know there was an election. As a political critter, you're like, how did you know that there was an election? But you still have to take the time. And members, this is where you can engage with the NRA. Of course, it's your clubs and other things, but this is the time to do that. And again, I'm not saying anything I'm not actually going to go do. So I kind of challenge everyone listening, you know, give them your $50 if you can afford it or more, but take the time out of your precious time out of your life and engage with your fellow citizens. That's how we keep the Republic, Cam, is to get people engaged in the process. As a hassle as that is, and I get it, but it takes that level of engagement. And if more of us do it, we win.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I see responses, you know, to the NRA's post on social media, a lot of folks saying, yeah, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll, you know, you need to do X, Y, or Z before I come back or before I trust you. And again, you know, kind of piggybacking on what you said, if you get involved, you'll be able to see for yourself, right? You'll be able to start to connect with these NRA employees. You'll get a, you know, inside look at what's going on. This is an organization, ideally, that is member driven, right? I mean, I remember Chris Cox talking about, you know, he could go up to Capitol Hill and talk to politicians all day long, and they wouldn't listen to him if he didn't have the NRA membership backing him up, right? So ultimately, you know, the strength of the NRA comes from its members. It doesn't come from its executive vice president. It doesn't come from its NRA ILA director or the 76 board members or however many board members there are 3 years from now. The power of the NRA comes from its rank and file members. And again, as a rank and file member, speaking for myself, you know, we do have the opportunity to get involved and to bring this organization forward. So it's not just a matter of, well, let's see what they're doing in Fairfax. It's a matter of, do I want to be a part of that change? Do I want to help this organization improve and become stronger? Because those opportunities are there. So we're going to have, you know, folks who sit on the couch and complain. But again, there's opportunities all around the country right now to help make the NRA a stronger organization, to make the organization the way we want it to look like as members, quite frankly.
Yeah, maybe as we get closer to 2026 or 2028, you and I can get together and maybe show people actually how the process works to get them engaged. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Cam, outside the I've got a frog in my throat. Outside the National Archives, and I mention this all the time, it's on all most of my profiles. As you walk up the stairs to go to the National Archives to look at the Constitution, on the right, as you walk up the stairs, it says eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. And Cam, that eternal vigilance is what we're asking a little bit from every person. We're only one or two generations from losing our republic. We might have lost it, but you know, the might have lost it only matters if we don't engage. And that has to matter. So we have to teach that eternal vigilance. It's not necessarily understood. So hopefully you, me, and a couple of other people, hopefully a lot of other people get engaged to make that difference and be that eternal vigilance.
Well, listen, Tim, I mean, obviously I've got a lot of respect for you as a friend. I've got a lot of respect for you as a segment of an advocate, but I really do appreciate you joining me on the program today. And again, continuing to use your voice to try to make a difference in this organization that that we both, you know, believe in. So we thank you again for everything that you're doing. And if I don't talk to you before then, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. But I know we'll be spending some time together, hopefully in person in 2026. It was great seeing you in Atlanta. And at the very least, I hope to see you at the NRA annual meeting next year, if not before then.
I'll plan on it, Kim.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Tim Nye joining us on NRA, or excuse me, almost had a flashback there, on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks again to Tim for joining us on the program. And again, I don't need to reiterate what we talked about here, but Tim is a good guy, and it is good to see him speaking out once again. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. A convicted felon who robbed Garland Bank while on supervised release has been sentenced. Now, thankfully, this is not one of those recidivist stories where we're complaining about the current sentence, you know, that was just handed down. 51-year-old Damon Johnson actually got a 200-month sentence from U.S. District Judge Jane Boyle after pleading guilty to a bank robbery regarding a November 14th, 2024 robbery of the PNC Bank in Garland, Texas, where he grabbed a customer from behind a teller station, held her hostage, then pointed a gun at the teller, demanded cash, took off running after getting almost $4,000 from the register. He was arrested the following month, shortly after he was indicted. No, the reason why we're talking about Mr. Johnson today is because of his previous criminal history, which dates back to at least 1991, when he was convicted in Michigan of assault with intent to do great bodily harm less than murder, where he was accused of raping a woman and then setting the victim on fire. Now, I realize that, you know, look, even people who are convicted of murder can get out on parole or probation. But when you hear that sentence, Johnson raped a woman and then set her on fire. My first thought was, why the hell was he out? I mean, to me, that should be life without parole. No questions asked. That is just an absolutely horrific crime. But no, he was let out at some point. And at the time of the bank robbery, he was actually on federal supervised release for two prior federal convictions. One, a 130-month sentence for possession with intent to distribute cocaine, as well as a 10-year sentence for possessing a firearm as a convicted felon. You know, so even with all of the challenges to, you know, 922G right now, where you've got people like Melinda Vincent challenging her lifetime prohibition on owning a firearm because you wrote a bad check, right? It is, I think, an open question as to whether or not that blanket prohibition on gun ownership should apply constitutionally to individuals who are convicted of nonviolent offenses, individuals, again, who are unlawful users of at least some drugs. In this case, Damon Johnson would have been prohibited, I think, under the standard of any appellate court in the country right now, no matter how judicious some appellate courts are in terms of recognizing the inherent importance of our right to keep our arms. That rape and setting a woman on fire, that's going to lead, I think, any court in the country to determine that Mr. Johnson is dangerous and therefore not legally eligible to regain his right to keep and bear arms. Anyway, he's going to prison for 200 months or so. Time off for early or for good behavior, not really a thing in the federal judiciary. So that 200-month sentence, I think, is going to stick, and Damon Johnson is going to have plenty of time to cool his heels behind bars before he is given the opportunity to commit another offense in the future. Today's armed citizen story from Colorado Springs, Colorado, where KXRM reports that a suspect was shot in the leg by a homeowner during an alleged burglary there in Colorado. Actually, this was in the Pueblo area. According to the Pueblo Police Department, a 911 call made shortly before 2:30 in the afternoon on Monday from a woman reporting that her brother had shot somebody. When police arrived on the scene, they found a suspect there with a gunshot wound to his right thigh. This individual taken to a local hospital for treatment. The homeowner was interviewed by officers there at the scene. He told officers that he had come back to his home, found the front door open, and then found a stranger inside. So the homeowner ran to his bedroom, grabbed his gun, texted his sister, who also lives at the home, to make sure that she was okay, but also to make sure she didn't know the guy. Like, is this somebody that my sister invited over? No, it was not. So the homeowner then confronted the man, who police identified as someone named Ricardo Alonso Diaz. Turns out Diaz was armed with a knife. The homeowner then shot Diaz, hit him in the leg before telling his sister to call 911. Diaz was interviewed at a local hospital, apparently. He admitted that he was homeless, said he'd been checking doors in the area. He said he found the door to this particular home unlocked, went inside, and couldn't see that anybody was home. So he went to the fridge, grabbed some food, ate, then left, and then came back, he said, which was when he was confronted by the homeowner. He was booked in the Pueblo County Jail on charges of second-degree burglary. He is due in Pueblo County Court on December 17th. You know, I have a great deal of sympathy for individuals who find themselves on the street. I can only imagine what it is like in Colorado in December. Having said that, doesn't give you the right to break into somebody's home, even if it's unlocked. Doesn't give you the right to go to their pantry or their kitchen and eat their food and then, you know, sleep on their couch or walk away or come back later. And if you do that, you are likely again to face a homeowner who rightfully is in fear for their life, especially, by the way, if you're armed. So, you know, I hope Mr. Diaz gets the chance to turn his life around at some point, but you do the crime, you better do some time too. On to today's good deed of the day. From Oklahoma, where a good Samaritan rescued a woman from a truck wreck near Tahlequah in the eastern part of the state. We have had a lot of these fiery car crash stories, but thankfully, again, with some happy endings here. News on Six in Tulsa cover the story of Jesse Cotter and Ebony Pepino. Ebony is 18 years old. She was driving home from her mom's house on Thanksgiving, and it started raining. And her truck, she says, the back of my truck started like fishtailing. She says, I tried to correct myself. She says, I don't know if I overcorrected or something. She said, the last thing she remembers is closing her eyes. And when she opened them, she had crashed up into a ditch. Meanwhile, Jesse Cotter says, we're coming around the last curve of a place called the Bootnot Hill. Yes, Oklahoma does have a few hills, believe it or not, especially in the eastern part of the state. And he said, right when we got there, we saw a truck that had just wrecked because the smoke was coming up and there was fire. Jesse's wife was behind the wheel. She pulled over. Jesse Cotter hopped out of the truck. He could see Ebony struggling to get out of her vehicle. He said she wasn't able to come out. He said, I just pulled her out real quick. He said, Ebony said she knew she was safe. She said, couldn't be more thankful. She said, it makes me want to cry. She started to feel weak. Jesse Cotter picked her up, carried her back to his car, drove her to local hospital. He said he didn't think twice about helping. He said, I'd do it again. He said, I'm just glad that God put me there in that moment. Whenever he did, God has a way of putting me where I'm needed, and I couldn't be more thankful for it. Believe it or not, Ebony Pepino only had a few bruises from this wreck. The car is obviously a total loss. I mean, it's up in flames, but, you know, again, you can replace a vehicle. You can't replace a life. And Jesse and Ebony say they plan to stay in touch. She actually went to church with Jesse's wife, and they discovered they actually live like right down the road from each other. So in the right place, at the right time, willing, able to do the right thing. And as a result, making a new friend, Jesse Cotter and his wife there in Welling, Oklahoma. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. I will be with you. God willing, the creek don't rise, right? We'll be talking more about the latest segment of news and information from all across the nation. Have another hugely important conference coming up at the Supreme Court on Friday, where the backlog of Second Amendment cases is growing. Supreme Court's already granted cert to two of them, as we talked with Costas Morris yesterday. Will they grant a third? Could they grant a fourth? And actually, you know, we were talking about the importance of Duncan versus Bonna, which is the California mag ban case, right? And if the Supreme Court denies cert to Duncan, then California's magazine ban takes effect in its entirety, including the provisions that say, hey, even though you legally purchased a large capacity magazine, you've got to destroy it. You've got to permanently modify it so it can't accept more than 10 rounds. You got to hand it over to the police. You got to get it out of state. That kicks in. But I also heard from our viewer, David, who reminded me that Miller versus Bonta, which is the challenge to California's ban on so-called assault weapons, that's essentially been on hold in the Ninth Circuit until Duncan is adjudicated. So, again, if the court flicks away Duncan and allows the Ninth Circuit decision upholding that magazine ban to stand and take effect, the Ninth Circuit is then going to decide the future of California's ban on so-called assault weapons. And I think we all know what that decision will be. So all the more reason for the Supreme Court to hopefully not just grant cert in Duncan, but also to grant cert to Viramanas versus Cook County, which is the challenge to the so-called assault weapons ban in Cook County, Illinois. And give the court the opportunity to answer once and for all the question of, can you ban the most popular rifle in the country without violating people's Second Amendment rights? So we will likely be at least talking a little bit about those cases on tomorrow's program. But, you know, if there's other more important news that breaks, we'll certainly bring it to you. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information, including some good news out of the Garden State of New Jersey and efforts to put more restrictions on gun sellers in the state of New Mexico, among other stories. John Petrolino, Kerry Sloan, Tom Knight, and myself, all with stories for you at Bearing Arms, so be sure to check that out. And don't forget, the voting in the Gundies is still open as well. TheGundies.com. You can vote for John Petrolino, Tom Knighton as best two-way rider. You can vote for Barry and Arms Cam and Company as best podcast. We certainly do appreciate those votes. A lot of categories, though, and a lot of great Second Amendment advocates to vote for in each of those categories. So cast your vote at TheGundies.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.